Welcome to Buy and Build, the podcast about buying a business and building in public. Uncover the wins and losses as we renovate our business together. Come along for the ride. Now, here are your hosts of Buy and Build, Nicholas Scalp and Daryl Lim.
What's up, everybody? It's Daryl here and Nick from Buy and Build. We got a really special guest today. We got Andrew, the CEO of MicroAcquire, Andrew Gazdecki. And don't worry, we've listened to all the podcasts about how you have to say your name properly. So hopefully I did say it correctly right there.
You did. So,
awesome. So notice that there's been a lot of questions that go straight into business and they don't really ask you the nitty gritty and some of the personal questions. So let's get into some fun questions first. Let's get to know you, Andrew. So first of all, like, what kind of music do you listen to?
Wow, we're starting there. I definitely want to say thanks for having me, you guys. I really appreciate it. And thanks for researching too and pronouncing my name correctly. That's rare. Music, it depends. I am embarrassed saying this, but I listen to like some hip hop that I probably shouldn't. I like a lot of Drake, everything. Like, I can pull up my phone. I've been listening to a lot of like Jay-Z recently.
I actually love this.
I'll tell you what I have on repeat. Rico, yes. With Meek Mills and Drake. I've been listening to Cascade and Avicii again.
Nice.
Wiz Khalifa, When I'm Gone, Blessings, Big Sean, Believe Me, Lil Wayne, Drake, Nobody, Rick Ross, Moana by G-Eazy. I like that song a lot. Fake Lit, E-40. We All Die One Day with Obie Trice. So I listen to a lot of like hip hop, and then I'll kind of move over to like Tropical House. So yeah, don't judge me. That's my music taste.
You know what? Before I wrote this question and said, hey, like, what type of music do you listen to? I was going to say, what's your favorite hip hop song? But I'm like, wait, I don't know if he listens to hip hop. So I'm going to have to check myself and like,
I want to answer that. My favorite hip hop song.
Like, what's on repeat right now? Or like, what gets?
I can answer that. I would say Poppin' Bottles by T.I. It has Drake in it. The reason it's my favorite is when I was building business apps, I would listen to it on like repeat. So when I hear it, I kind of get like a little nostalgic. It's not the best hip hop song, but for me, it takes me back to like being in college and like, you know, having these dreams of like building a business. I don't know. So that would probably be my favorite. I mean, best hip hop song, I mean, probably Juicy by Biggie. That's probably like the best hip hop song, but Poppin' Bottles by T.I. just for me personally, probably comes to mind.
Nice. Now that we're kind of embarrassing ourselves about the best hip hop songs that we listen to, mine right now is Rick Ross, Hustlin'. It's a little bit older, but
yeah,
always gets me in the mood right in the morning, pump it up on my speaker when I'm taking a shower. And then the song that this is going to sound horrible, but Tupac, Picture Me Rolling. I love that song.
I love Tupac. Yeah. I would say my favorite Tupac song is To Live and Die in L.A. He has a really good song that Eminem put together with Biggie. I think it's called Dying to Live.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of hip hop in both those songs. So right on, man.
Nice. Yeah, the other part of the question is, you know, like, you're always building businesses and like you're like nonstop. So what do you do for fun?
Honestly, I don't really have too many hobbies outside of startups. I grew up with business as like my passion, but other things I enjoy. So startups is like number one. Like, if I meet like a founder of a startup that I respect, I kind of get like imposter syndrome. I'm like, oh my gosh, you like founded HubSpot? Like, whoa, you're so cool. Like, you know, that's so lame to say, but like, I really do. I'm like almost like a famous athlete or something like that. But When I'm not working on startups, so I just love what I do. I'm so fortunate to have found like something that I love to do, and I like make money doing it. Like that's kind of the trifecta in life. So I realize that, and I'm super thankful for that. But I love surfing. I grew up skateboarding. I was actually pretty damn good at skateboarding. I was sponsored by I'll tell you all my sponsors. I was on the B team for 777 skateboards. I was on Flow for Circa Footwear and Grind King. I was like a little kid that could like do a Benihana like over you and stuff on a ramp. So grew up in San Clemente, so surfed and skated a lot. And I like cars. I like fast cars. I like muscle cars. So that's probably the, and I like reading and listening to hip hop too.
Nice. Did you buy any particular car when you sold some of your businesses there?
I did. Nothing too ridiculous. I bought a C63 AMG. It was a 2012. My dad, a big car person, he helped design like the DeLorean. I originally was born in Detroit and then moved to San Clemente when I was young. So kind of come from like a car family. And I bought a C63 AMG year 2012 because after 2014, they started making the engines by turbo, and 2012 was naturally aspirated. And then I put on like a custom Army Trix aftermarket exhaust. It screams midlife crisis. It's super loud, and like my neighbors probably get it's the loudest car you can possibly own. And it's really fast too, but it was only 32,000. I bought it off some kid in LA, and he had like blacked it out. And he wanted like 40,000 for it. And I was like, no one's going to buy this car but me, because it's like murdered out. It's got this like aftermarket exhaust on it. It's definitely not the car you go, oh, I need a car. Why don't I get like a AMG? So that was the one, you know, trophy or whatever I bought. I still have it. And I, another fun, you to go back to your last question too, I honestly do this sometimes when I just want to get out of the house. I'll just go drive for like an hour. Like I'll just go and take my car and just literally just go on the freeway and then just like come back in a big circle. So I love driving cars.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, it's like definitely.
I was gonna say, you just slipped in, your father designed the DeLorean in there.
Yeah, that's definitely his claim to fame. Another interesting claim to fame I have is my uncle designed the Firebird. So the Firebird on the hood, he, you know, that was him. So yeah.
That's really cool.
Got a little bit of history, but yeah, we have like prototypes of the DeLorean, like fiberglass, like car things at my parents' house. So pretty cool.
Wow. That's awesome.
When are we going to see you in a DeLorean?
When I can afford one. They're expensive, man. Like they're like 50K or something. And I've never been in one, but eventually I'll let you know.
Nice.
Awesome. Cool. So I guess kind of in a different direction, what got you into entrepreneurship? So we kind of saw you started a World of Warcraft marketplace.
Yeah. So for me, I've talked about this a few times, but I grew up pretty poor. And so I explain it like this. When you grow up without a lot of means, entrepreneurship kind of is like a survival mechanism. Like you just need to make money. Like you don't have a lot. So you just are always kind of thinking like, how can I, you know, and better my life or whatever that may mean to who you are. But growing up in San Clemente, I think amplified that a little bit. Because it's a very affluent neighborhood. It's like near Laguna Beach. Everyone has like these beautiful homes. And I grew up, I have two brothers and a sister. My dad actually passed away when I was six. And so we were on like food stamps. It was just, you know, tough times. And so, you know, I just kind of always gravitated towards, I was like, I had like a lemonade stand, and they had like an eBay store. And then I had like, you know, the World of Warcraft website. Like I always just kind of like knew entrepreneurship was kind of my way out to a better life for me and my family. So that's what I focused on. And then I started to enjoy it. And I became better with each business. So I think that's how I got into it. But I was always that kid kind of tinkering around with stuff, like asking questions, like, why is this like the, I don't know. I was always a very, curious kid, I guess you could say. So, but that definitely is a reason. You know, if you grew up in an area where everyone's, you know, driving like an Escalade, going to Hawaii for spring break, and you're not. And it's the last thing I'll say on that too is, you know, I was always kind of like, how can I say this? I guess over my career, when I met more really successful entrepreneurs, just the pattern of how many really successful entrepreneurs come from like backgrounds like that is astonishing. So someone should do like a research report on like entrepreneurs that don't come from a lot of means, and like it builds this like drive in them. So that's the best answer I have for that. That and just enjoying it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like from a lot of different athletes' backgrounds, like you would say, like a lot of them that rise to the cream of the crop, they just come from like not very much means either, right? Like it's just their internal drive that makes them want to do more and strive for more.
Yeah, and one thing I would say too is, you know, to be successful as an entrepreneur, you don't have to be very smart. I think people get that wrong. You just need to have a lot of grit, resilience. And I think you kind of learn that.
You figure out how to piece the technical and all those aspects together, like business apps. That sounds extremely technical, but you put it all together.
It was very technical. We had an iPhone development team. We had an Android development team. We had a back-end server team. We had an automated tool to upload apps to the iTunes App Store and the Google Play, which took forever to engineer. But I think, you know, one of the best qualities an entrepreneur can have is the ability to learn really fast and the ability to teach yourself anything. So when it comes to the technical aspect of a business, I still don't really know how to code, but I'd like to think I'm pretty good at managing product teams. And it could be really simple. It can just be like you record a video and you say, hey, this button should go here and I think it should look like this. It doesn't have to be like I'm creating a Jira page with like step-by-step like instructions. But I think I just learned how to communicate with engineers really just by jumping in the pool. Like I didn't read a book. Like the story of how Business App started was, and if you read this, I had this job board before Business Apps. And I really just bought like a script. So there was no engineers involved in that. I just bought like a clone of Upwork and I just put it on a server. You could pay the company that you bought the script from to install it on a server. And it had like this admin configuration thing where you can make the categories and stuff. And so that was like, you know, I understood how like rent a server, get the code onto there. And then with Business Apps, I just hired an engineer from that marketplace to develop the initial prototype. And the marketplace, for people that don't know, was it just connected businesses with mobile developers. And then Business Apps was a do-it-yourself mobile app builder, like Wix or Weebly for mobile apps. So just kind of like, you know, got lucky, I guess, with the initial hires. You know, if I hired like a really bad engineer to start, I don't think I'd be talking to you guys. So long-winded answer, but I think the best way to learn stuff is just kind of jumping in the pool and just, you know, rolling with the punches. And, you know, that's kind of what I've done my whole career. So being able to teach yourself anything and just, you know, having that sort of that want to understand, and, you know, you don't have to be perfect at the role, but just being dangerous enough to, you know, communicate with what you're trying to accomplish. I hope that's a good answer. I don't have a good one for that. I mean, I guess I'm going to revert to,
this is hard, but you know, what are the solutions to this? You know, I started from a background where I created a fitness clothing brand, and then I went to like sell on Amazon and all these different things. But you really figure out what you need to do in order to take the next step. And I think that's what makes you better.
I completely agree. And no one knows sales and marketing and product development like when you're born. Like you just, you acquire these skill sets over time, and you can learn them from someone else. But I'm definitely in the boat of, you know, when you just, you know, venture out and start your own business, you learn those things very rapidly because you have to. You need to learn sales because your business will die. You need to learn marketing because if you don't, your business will die. You need to learn product development because if you don't, your business will die. So there's just more on the line that kind of pushes you a little faster. That's awesome, man.
Do you think that's an advantage or a disadvantage not being technical? Because, you know, I'm technical, and I've seen a bunch of like founders who are like, you know, doubling, tripling down on like, we have to improve the product and keep iterating on the product because that's like where they have their strength, like on the technical side, building the product.
Yeah.
Do you think,
It's a great question. You know, there's kind of a saying that I've been reading a lot of people say lately, which is first time founders focus on product, second time founders focus on distribution. I think equally are important, but I think what's happening today is product development is, it's less of a barrier to entry. It is so easy to launch a startup. Like when I launched business apps in 2010, we didn't have all this cool stuff that we have today. Like, you know, there's so many tools helping other people start startups. And so what that does is that increases the bar for, like Reid Hoffman is famous for saying, if you're not embarrassed by your first version, you've waited too long. I think we need to get rid of that because the bar for startups has been raised. There's so many people launching startups that look really good in like a weekend, like beautiful homepage, beautiful MVP. Not saying you shouldn't launch as quick as possible, but I'm saying product isn't really as much of a competitive advantage as we saw in 2010. And another way to put that is David Cancel from Drift says it perfectly. He said, we've kind of gone through three waves of SaaS. In 2010, it was kind of about invention. So it was the first one. So with business apps, I was the first one to make a do-it-yourself mobile app builder for small businesses. And we were right place, right time. The first version looked terrible, but there was nothing else available. So we kind of, you know, got those first customers, reinvested that revenue into the business, and you know, the rest is history. If I did that today, everyone would laugh at the product and be like, no, we won't use this. The second phase was basically learning the best go-to-market models, like LTV to CAC, who can, you know, put 10 in and get 50 out, who had the best, you know, model of scaling their business. So everyone knows how to build products now. Everyone knows, you know, go-to-market models now. And then now we're entering this third wave of SaaS, which is brand, which is kind of like the last defensible part of your business, which is really just, you know, the attention and the mind share that you have with your customers. So another long-winded answer, so I apologize, but I would say, you know, I wish I could build a product without, you know, hiring engineers for sure. But I do think having a marketing background and a sales background over the next decade is going, we're going to see more founders. Let me put it this way. I would make a bet that over the next decade, some of the market leading companies that we're going to see built are going to be led by market focused founders, sales focused founders, founders that are just really good at helping their company stand out from all the other products because it's so easy to make products today. So not a disadvantage, but man, if you can build products and you can sell, then you know you can go really far.
I think that's why Nick and I kind of work together, because Nick's the technical developer side. I come from a sales marketing background. So we thought like kind of our partnership would mesh together quite well.
Yeah, that's a perfect combo.
You have more time than 30 minutes? Because we have a few questions.
Yeah, no, this is fun. Let's keep going.
Awesome.
you got me in a good mood right at the start with the with the questions. Usually it's like, how do I pronounce your last name? Tell me about business app. So yeah, let's keep going.
I don't know if you know this, but I've been like literally trying to comment on every one of your LinkedIn posts, just like making a comment on there so you get your attention, or like something on like the microacquire page. And I'm like, hey, if I ping him enough times, he'll know who I am and maybe he'll come on the show.
Yeah, I'm happy to join any podcast. I always think it's a fun way to just get to know you too.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. I mean, like, obviously we're not quite at the stage that we want to be at, but you know, we love learning from different people and networking and connecting, and yeah, I really appreciate your time.
Of course.
So you know, you kind of built out a few different companies and got them acquired. Do you have like a playbook that you kind of default to
for selling businesses?
For going from like zero to one, right? From starting to scaling.
From zero to one, that's a good question. Zero to one for me, I'm a big, so I've always architected almost like the entire business. Like I did it for business apps. I did it initially for Allcoin. I did it for MicroAcquire. And what I mean by that is I think of who's the customer, what is the product, what is the brand, you know, what is the marketing strategy, how are we going to make money, you know, all the initial components of the business, from product to marketing to sales to operations. And I kind of, you know, I do it all at first, and then I bring other people in to help me once things start to, like, I just can't do it all. But in terms of a process, every business I've started is so dramatically different. So I don't, like business apps was a do-it-yourself mobile app builder with multiple moving parts. We sold to small businesses and web agencies. Allcoin was more of a technology IP project. We wanted to launch that company, but there was a lot of regulations around it. So we ended up just selling the assets of that business. And then MicroAcquire, again, a customer is, you know, entrepreneurs looking to sell their business. It's a marketplace. I have the chicken and egg problem, you know. So everyone has been kind of different, but I guess I try to lean into businesses that have tailwinds, because I think that makes a zero to one a lot easier. So with business apps, that was major. I call that obvious problem in an obvious market with an obvious solution. And that's kind of like the trifecta. And those businesses, it's like catching lightning in a bottle. iPhone just came out and every business wanted to get an iPhone, and I built a way to make that super easy and affordable. I'm no genius. It's just, you know, people wanted that. So I, you know, rushed to make that solution. Allcoin, that was during the last crypto boom. I kind of like launched it right as the peak, and then the trough, like right as like the market was crashing, I launched it, which timing on that wasn't very good. And to elaborate on what we were building with that, we built an atomic swap wallet, which is, it would allow you to, let's say you had Bitcoin and you wanted to trade with someone for Ethereum without someone in the middle. It was like a decentralized way of trading cryptocurrencies in this really cool way. But there's tons of regulations on, you know, what you need to launch that, like money transmitter license. Basically, you need like the SEC's approval. So we just kind of pivoted and like focused on the technology, and then sold that technology to a company that had the regulatory approval. And then MicroAcquire, so mobile, and then blockchain, and then MicroAcquire. The thesis, acquisitions are going to become a little bit more normal. We're going to start to see a lot of first-time buyers, people that are looking to acquire a business rather than start something from scratch. And this was more just out of personal insight I saw, where I looked at the market and there wasn't any innovation from what I could tell. There was brokers in the market. There was these old marketplaces, kind of just where anything went. Like there just wasn't anything specific to SaaS or something that I felt, you know, someone you know, seriously looking at acquiring a startup, whether it be a SaaS company or e-commerce company. Or so I kind of scratched my own itch with that one. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, for 0 to 1, I look for what's not obvious today, but I think will become obvious in the future, and then try to, you know, ride the coattails of, you know, the market. Because if you're in a growing market and you're like kind of one of the first ones there, you know, you get to benefit from that. And it's super hard to do, and it definitely requires lots of luck. But that's kind of how I think about building businesses is, you know, what's going to be interesting in 2 years? Where are big markets moving? So I don't have, I could give you the tactical, like, you know, I launch landing page and then I reach, use cold yeah. email and then I go on social media. Like, but the bigger component I'd probably articulate is, you know, trying to find a market trend for other people to do.
Yeah, do you have any that you're, sorry, right there.
I think that's really common practice in like even the e-commerce world, where you try and like go into a market space where it's like before it becomes popular, you try and take a hold of that space and, you know, make sure you're kind of first to market to doing that. But I just thought it was interesting how you mentioned that that was one of your strategies, as like there's another interview you did with Neil Patel, and he mentions TAM, like the total addressable market. And it's almost like a different direction. He's just like, I want a piece of that pie, which I already know is generating a ton of revenue.
Yeah. So I would probably debate that. You know, so what Neil was saying is he likes businesses with large addressable markets where there's a lot of existing demand today. And then he just wants to get a small slice of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very practical way to build businesses. But the game-changing businesses that you see being built are ones that are usually, they enter a small TAM market. Like if you look at Zoom as an example, like when they entered, they were like laughed out of the room. There was all these other, you know, like video players and stuff like that, but they increased the TAM by enabling people and organizations to subscribe by like one seat. Zoom might not be the best example, but what's a low team? Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is the best companies always find a way to enter a market with a small TAM today, and then it just kind of grows over time. And I think all SaaS companies, all cloud companies could probably fall into that bucket. Like the TAM for like Twilio or something like that when they first launched was tiny. And now it's absolutely massive because there's more startups needing their service and stuff like that. So it just depends on like what type of business you're trying to build. Neil has a huge audience, so he can look at, you know, a large market and kind of make a duplicate product and then just make it marginally better and then have more distribution. But that's never going to be like $100 million business. It's going to be maybe like a 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 million dollar business. But if you're trying to build like $100, $200 million business, you need to be in a market that, not all the time, but in my opinion, you need to be in a situation where you find a market opportunity that no one else is really paying attention to. And then you become kind of the category leader by growing the TAM of that market. Like Gainsight probably comes to mind. When they came out with customer success, it wasn't even a thing. And then they, you know, basically created a category of customer success. It created like a new job role for people. I think that's a really good story of just, you know, small TAM and they increased it and they were the market leader and they sold to Vista for $1 billion or something. So both strategies work. I like the ones that are a little bit more innovative, I guess, is probably what I'm getting at.
Do you have some markets that you're looking at where you're like, you know, if I wasn't doing micro acquire, that's the direction I'd be moving towards?
That's a really good question. I try to think of like what I'm blockchain for sure. You know, I think blockchain has a ton of interesting applications, but the problem with blockchain is the user experience is terrible. It feels like you're using the internet in the year 2000. Like you need like MetaMask, you need all these third-party things, you're probably going to get hacked. Like, it just feels sketch. So I would be looking at building tools for that market, almost like developer tools that were built, like infrastructure tools, like things that make these blockchain apps like run faster, run smoother, where you can use a blockchain application, not even know blockchains in the background. I don't know what that is, but that's one area I'd look. Areas I wouldn't look is I wouldn't look at remote work. I wouldn't look at, you know, team productivity stuff, you know, things that seem relevant today. You know, I'd be looking at, you know, what do I think the world is going to look like 2 years from now? Because, you know, when you focus on like remote work tools today, you're going up against like 500 different teams building tools for today. And you want to be thinking about what's going to be relevant in 1 to 2 years. And, you know, those businesses are so much harder to build, like, cause you're probably going to be wrong. But if you get it right, that's how you kind of catch lightning in a bottle and you're able to build these really interesting businesses. But yeah, I don't have a good answer to that, because if I did, I'd probably be working on it.
We want to get into like MicroQuire here and just ask you some questions about that. Just to let you know how we found out about MicroQuire, Nick and I are actually part of a Slack group. It's called All Access Pass. It was done by Sean Perry of My First Million. And there was a post in there, and I think you guys were doing a contest together. I think it was 10 grand at first before you did the one with the hustle. And he posted it in the group, and just, I think Ben, his go-to man, posted it in the group. And I said, hey, this would be cool if some of the people in the group here would buy a business from MicroQuire. And that's how we actually got introduced to your business, because we're like, we're probably not going to win this contest. We'll just buy a business and see what happens.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, with MicroQuire, we know like you're talking about buying the business yourself and you had problems, and that's kind of what attracted you to build the business in the first place. But like, what makes MicroQuire stand out from,
you know, well, for one, it's entirely free for founders to list their business. Other marketplaces, you'll see fees ranging from 5% to 15%. So it's entirely free if you're a founder. It's kind of like a startup acquisition canon. Like, as soon as I press like publish, and so another differentiating piece is all listings are manually reviewed by me. So I have a team that I've hired now that helps make every listing look, you know, professional. We create buyer presentations. So it's kind of in between like a Flippa and a broker, where, you know, we curate the listings. We don't just let anything get posted there. We do our best to verify, you know, information. So I'd like to think of it as just higher quality, you know, tech company listings. And we focus specifically on small tech companies. Majority is SaaS. Starting to see lots of e-commerce, direct-to-consumer, some crypto companies, tons of mobile apps. But I would say that, and then, you know, really the business model as well, is where, again, by not charging the founders, you know, we just simply charge, buyers a small fee to, you know, speak directly with founders. So rather than having, like, if you're working with a broker, you're working directly with the founder. So it's a mix between, you know, old, I'd call it like version one marketplaces, and then taking all the benefits of a broker and just kind of combine those together. Like, that's kind of how I think of MicroQuire, just being in the middle of like a full service end-to-end broker, and then kind of the anything goes marketplace. It's like right in the middle. Yeah, I always say with marketing, there's no silver bullet. There's no one thing. Like, you know, you can be featured in TechCrunch once or something like that, and it doesn't ever, you get this big blip. And that was with Sean. We got a big blip and then it goes away. And then, you know, the hustle, we get a big blip and it goes away. So you need to be just really consistent. Initially, it was a lot of just talking with buyers, you know, doing a lot of customer research. I talked with a lot of accelerators, seed investors, people that had access to a large amount of startups. And so built relationships with them, and then had a cold email campaign targeted towards smaller startups. So that was like the initial way that I seeded the marketplace. I got buyers involved, and then I got a few startups listed, and then I launched it on Product Hunt, and then that kind of gave me like a nice spike. And then from there, mostly just content marketing. I focus on pretty much everything: SEO, SEM, Facebook ads, Instagram ads. I sponsor a ton of different podcasts. Yeah, and then just like doing fun stuff, like the, you know, business giveaway with The Hustle was a ton of fun. And then the business that we acquired with Sean was a ton of fun. Just doing that. I think that those are just kind of like parts of storytelling where you actually can, instead of saying like, hey, we're a marketplace with some stuff you can buy, it's more like, you know, hey, we just acquired this app for this, you know, young 23-year-old. It's doing this much in profit. It's a Shopify app. And here's how we're going to grow the app, kind of follow us on this journey. That's so much more interesting than just buying an ad somewhere. But I do think, you know, kind of doing a little bit of everything is important. But the most important thing you can do when it comes to marketing is having proper attribution in place, so you know, what's working, you know, because when you do everything, you know, one channel is going to be really effective and then one's going to be okay. And so knowing what your best channels are, I think is crucial. So kind of done everything. Now I'm kind of just moving towards, you know, a small ad budget. And just right now I'm starting to see just word of mouth just taking off, which is great. So lowered the ad budget and then just starting to see organic growth at this point.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. You can really tell a difference between the curated marketplaces and the non-curated ones. Because like when I first looked into this, I was like, I don't know if I feel comfortable buying a business. And then I saw MicroAcquire and I was like, that's exactly what I want to see. Like that level of content as I go through and look, like everything seems cleaned up.
Yeah. One thing I'll say too is Naval, the founder of Angelus, says his best, but there's something that he describes as like product market founder fit, where I really enjoy running MicroAcquire. I love, again, you guys asked me in the beginning, like, what do I like to do for fun? I love startups. So how do you think I feel every morning when I wake up and there's these like cool startups I get to list and I get to make the profile and stuff like that? So I think that's probably another competitive advantage for the marketplace is I ran it for free for 10 months because I thought it was fun. And then the business model we have now, I put in place because founders were just kind of getting too many requests. So this was a way of just like separating, like, all right, if you can't pay like $300, you're probably not serious. So it's, and then that was good seed funding. And I've been using that to reinvest. But to your point, you know, just really caring, you know, like I want these listings to look good and I want them to look in a way that would appeal to me. So I think that maybe is another differentiator as well, as I just really enjoy helping founders. I don't know.
Yeah. And you're actually an entrepreneur in residence for 500 startups, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like a cool title you get for mentoring some of their startups. But yeah, I don't like go and hang out in their office all day or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that just kind of shows like what you're saying, like you're a good fit for that. You know, you're a fan of it.
So 500 startups, how that works when you're an entrepreneur in residence is they have batches of startups and you get paired with founders and they pick you. They say, hey, and then you chat and see if there's a fit. And then you work with them every week for about 4 months as they go through the accelerator and you're the kind of like their guide and you get to help them, you know, with anything from product to marketing to fundraising to whatever they need help with. So I enjoy that a lot. I do that for a number of other, I'm an advisor to like a dozen different startups, not a dozen, maybe half a dozen. But I love helping founders because it's really rewarding when you can give founder like a tip on a mistake that I've made. And you're like, don't do that because it like really cost me a lot of money or like was a huge headache for me. So if you can avoid that, like it makes me feel good that I made the mistake and I can help other people avoid it.
Yeah. Nice. Love it. one of the questions that a lot of entrepreneurs have out in the world is they have all these different options. They have drop shipping, they have Amazon, they have SaaS, like anything and everything that you can think of. So, you know, when they have this offer about like buying a business or starting from scratch, why should someone consider buying a business over starting from scratch and like using MicroAcquire?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, I mean, when you buy a business, you're really de-risking the venture because it has customers, it's a working product. And if you're the type of person like that likes to go from 1 to 2 to 3, maybe 1 to 10, you could buy a product that has product market fit, happy paying customers, or you could start from 0 and then you kind of got to wait like a year to get your first customer, and then you might not even get a first customer. So it's almost like this new form of entrepreneurship where people have so many different ideas, but how do you validate those ideas? Do you like, how passionate are you about those ideas? And if you're just looking for a business to run, like you just want to own your own business, you can really de-risk entrepreneurship, in my opinion, by buying a business that has everything that you need to just scale it. So it has product market fit, it has customers already paying. And these are all people that you can speak to and you can learn from, and you can figure out how to improve the business and grow the business, as opposed to, again, like thinking up a random idea, building the product, figuring out where to go get the customers. All that's already solved. And that's the hardest part about startups. That's where the majority of startups fail, is they build something no one wants, and then they go to market, and then they talk to a bunch of customers and no customers will pay for it. And then they spend more money on the product thinking that's how they're going to get customers, or they pivot or something like that. And 2 years goes by. This isn't the case for every startup, obviously, but this is like the worst case scenario. And then they realize, you know, this is a product the world didn't need. And there's lots of ways to prevent that, but buying a business is a way to definitely prevent that from happening. So I think it's just a great way for people that are looking to, you know, get into entrepreneurship. They aren't sure what type of business, they don't have an idea, they don't know really what like how to get something into the world to start. They can buy something with such a strong foundation and then use their skill sets, whether that's sales, marketing, branding, or it could be product, number of different things. So it basically is like a fast track way into having like a successful business, and then using your expertise to grow that business over time.
And the thing I love about MicroAcquire is that, you know, the pricing is, it's all over the place. It's a wide range. It can be anywhere from, I think, like $5,000 to like millions of dollars. And, you know, when the idea first got brought up about buying a business, I was almost immediately hesitant because I didn't know what entailed like buying a business. So you just think, oh, you know, you got to buy this retail space, or you buy this huge business for like $1 million, and you hear people selling their business for $5 million. So you just instantly think, wow, I can't afford anything. But then, you know, we were just roaming around MicroAcquire and we're like, wow, there's like pricing at every different price point. It just depends on like how much work you want to put into it, where it's at, and like if you believe in the product and if you think you can bring it somewhere.
Yeah, I think the smaller, those are my favorite ones to list on the marketplace, because sometimes, you know, people build great products, but, you know, they don't like sales and marketing. You know, some people love sales and marketing, but they don't know how to build a product. And so those businesses, you're able, like, I'll give you a real example. So I bought a business called Chimp Charge. I grew it to, let's call it like 60K in annual recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. And I bought it for like 10K or something. This was like last year. And I use it for all my billing on MicroAcquire. So you probably have seen it if you've subscribed to premium. But it didn't have good positioning. It pricing was too expensive. There was just a few really minor changes that I made. I just adjusted the positioning, simplified the wording a little bit, made it clear who it was for, positioned towards freelancers, reduced the pricing down, because it's a really simple application. And I got it into the Stripe App Store. I launched it on Product Time. Just no marketing had been really done, and I just made these simple changes. I added a viral loop on the payment page. So when you see the payment page, you get an invoice from GymCharge and from MicroAcquire. So people will sign up after they use GymCharge. So people who have signed up for MicroAcquire Premium have then signed up for GymCharge, and it's just like this big circle of customers. It's now free. Funny story, someone reached out to buy it, and I said, you know what, let's just make this free. And then I just made it free and canceled everyone's accounts on it. But that example right there, like, it was just a good product in a big market, and it was a simple solution. And then I just played around with the positioning and the pricing, built in a viral loop, and then, you know, got it into some places where I can see consistent distribution, like Product Hunt, and then definitely the Stripe App Store. And that really just, you know, helped it grow. It's not always that easy, but, you know, if you find a good product and you can see ways to improve it pretty easily, there's some good acquisition for sure.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, going through MicroAcquire, I have to hold myself back, because I'll look through there and I'm like, that one's really cool. Like, oh, you could do this and that with it. There's just a number of them in there where, I see what this one has space to grow. I'm pretty interested in that.
Yeah. How do you think I feel? I see them first. I see them for everybody. But I literally, yeah, I tell myself like all the time, just focus on the marketplace. Everything's off limits. Because yeah, I see it every day. Every day I'm like, this is a really, that's probably my favorite part about MicroAcquire, is it opens your eyes to just how much opportunity there is with online businesses. Like, there's a CRM for like orthodontists or something recently making like $1 million a year. It's just like, what? Like, who would think to make that? Like, and they're killing it. And so it just opens your eyes that, you know, not every business needs to be this like gigantic, huge thing. And you can just carve out a little niche in a existing market with a similar solution. And so it's, yeah, there's definitely, you know, some interesting stuff in there for sure.
Cool. It's funny you use that example. The last project I built up from scratch was a CRM for physical therapy.
Nice.
So,
yeah, I mean, you can make a CRM for anything if you just kind of, you know, and that goes back to, you know, Neil Patel's strategy of, he looks for big markets and he just niches a product and just wants a small slice of it, which is a very practical form of entrepreneurship. And I think, you know, again, going back to why build versus buy, buying is a very practical form of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I can tell you, if I bought that company, I would have known 6 months faster it wasn't a great company for me to build.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people who are listening to this are probably people who haven't really quite pulled the trigger yet and said, yeah, I want to buy a business. And they're thinking about it. And, you know, there's probably a lot going through their head. Like us, we got a lot of excitement. And then we're like, all right, we got the business now. What should we do? Like, what's the most practical advice that you can give to all those people who are on the fence and like what they should do once they have that business?
That's a good question. So I write a lot about everything related to SaaS acquisition. So I would go to resources.microacquire.com. I just wrote this 57 page. I just went crazy one night and wrote everything from how to raise pricing, how to, you know, renegotiate affiliate deals, how to, you know, what is conversion rate optimization? What is SEO, SEM? Like kind of the 10 like most practical ways to grow a business after you acquire it without spending a lot of cash. So there's a whole free guide on MicroAcquire about that. And then if you just like, what do you even do if you want to buy a company? Where do you even start? Like, what's a letter of intent? Like, what's a asset purchase agreement? Like, what is all this stuff? There's a ton of guides on MicroAcquire. If you sign up on MicroAcquire, I believe the second email you get is like a 10 ebook collection that goes over everything you could possibly want to know. Not everything, but the basics. So I'm giving myself a shameless plug here. I'm saying go to the resource area MicroAcquire, and I have some good resources on what to do after you buy a company. And then if you're not even sure of how to buy a company, I have some resources on that that are probably good to check out.
Yeah, well, I think we'll plug that link down below in our description anyways, and then obviously link back to MicroAcquire so people can go to the site if they haven't heard of it or haven't been to it yet. But yeah, that's awesome. Like, really appreciate it. I think one of the, I don't think we really have any other questions besides that. I mean, it's been really awesome having you on the call. You know, you've given us a lot of insight, some honesty and some transparency about who Andrew is really about. And that's great. I think that's what people are looking for. And you've always, like, I think every time I've gone on support for MicroQuire, you're like, yeah, it's Andrew here. I'm like, what? How is the CEO messaging me back? This is weird, but this is awesome.
I, you know, that's one thing I've always enjoyed, even like at Business Apps. So support was our biggest department. And even when we had like 30 people in support or something like that, I would still answer emails. The one last funny thing I'll say is at Business Apps, when I would answer customer requests emails, because if you answer questions as CEO at a company, like the person always just wants you to respond. So I had a pseudonym. It was Odysseus MacArthur III. Any former Business Apps employee can 100% verify this. I would go on our help desk in the morning for no reason, and I'd just start answering questions as Odysseus MacArthur III. And then sometimes people would be like, I heard otherwise that like you were going to release this feature. And I'd be like, nope, I'm the CTO. Like I can confirm 100%. This is a, like, anyways, what I'm trying to say is I thoroughly enjoy interacting with customers. So don't be surprised if you see me on live chat. And for other entrepreneurs, it's not something I recommend. It's just something I enjoy.
That's awesome. There's a lot of people who are like, that's like the secret, is to make sure you constantly talk to customers, and it's probably even better when you sneak it in.
It kind of is like you get product feedback, you get, you know, I get to meet awesome people like you guys, you know, it, you know, I think people want to know who runs the business. Like they want to know who's behind this thing. And I think when you can build that trust at scale, like you can today, I think that's something that, you know, you should do and you should leverage.
So, yeah, I mean, that's it for the show. Really appreciate everyone listening to the call. We'd love to have you back again, Andrew, at some point or another, you know, talk a little bit more, get to know you better. And maybe you can even critique our small business that we bought off of MicroQuire and all the changes we're doing. Shameless ask right on the podcast.
I'll do it anytime. Like, just, you have my calendar invite, so just schedule another thing whenever. I really enjoyed this. Thanks for having me on. I'd be more than happy to come on again.
Awesome, appreciate it. Cool. For everyone else, we've got like a ton of great interviews coming up. We're gonna try and like give everyone an update about all the little things that we've changed on our website and our business, so then we can try and get it to the forefront in our industry.
You can find more episodes and a link to the community of Buy and Build Podcast at buybuildpod.com. Remember to like, rate, and share with your friends on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Join us again next week as we continue our journey. We'll see you in the next one.